I'm John Batchelor. Natural law. I welcome someone to help us understand natural law in the 21st century. Samuel Gregg, writing at Civitas Outlook, part of Civitas Institute. Sam is a contributing editor to Civitas Outlook at the University of Texas. His day job, however, is Sam, the Frederick Hayek Chair in Economics and Economic History at the American Institute for Economic Research. And he's now going to take us 2,500, 3,000 years ago at least. That's the philosophy of natural law. That's how old it is. But it is about to be updated. Sam, a very good evening to you. Thank you for this. A definition. What is natural law as we understand it in the 21st century? Good evening to you.
Well, thanks very much, John. It's great to be with you. So as you said, natural law is at least 2,500 years old. I would argue it probably goes back even further. But it's a philosophical way of understanding the world. It's maybe the philosophical tradition that is most at the heart of the Western tradition. It includes thinkers like Plato, Aristotle, Thomas Aquinas, Maimonides, etc. But a working definition in the 21st century would be something like this. Natural law is natural reason. And by that I mean the capacity of the human mind to recognize moral good, moral truth, and moral evil, and then to know how to freely choose in light of one's knowledge of these moral truths. So if you look at something like the works of Thomas Aquinas, natural law is really built into the human condition. It's built into the human mind. We can discern moral truth through reflecting, using our mind, using our reason, to reflect upon moral problems, to identify what is good, what is evil, and then we can freely choose the good and avoid evil. So that's a basic working condition of natural law. Now, of course, there's entire treatises written explaining and elaborating what I just said. But maybe another way of understanding natural law is the opposite of natural law, which is relativism or philosophical skepticism. By relativism, I mean the idea that good and evil are simply a question of the conditions and circumstances you find yourself in, and that it's relative to your situation, relative to your circumstances. And another way of thinking about it in terms of opposites is philosophical skepticism. Philosophical skepticism, which goes back to people like David Hume, for example, but it even goes further back to some Greek thinkers, is the idea that the human mind really can know no truth definitively, and that we should be suspicious of any claim to truth, especially moral truth.
Your essay introduces drama immediately. You write that every decade or so, natural law is considered dead, useless, pointless, get out of here, old-fashioned. Why is that? Can we tell when it's happening? And is it happening now, Sam?
So natural law has always been challenged. It was challenged at the time when people like Aristotle were writing. It was challenged by those who are called the sophists. The sophists said that essentially there is really no truth except power. And that's how we have to understand the way in which the world actually works. So natural law has been attacked. Every time it is explained and explicated, whether in the academy or in the public square. But it has a way of coming back. It has a way of coming back because people deep down know. They know that there are certain things that it is never permissible to do. So, for example, many people have an instinctive reaction against something like torture. They may not be able to explain philosophically why they have this reaction, but they know there's something intrinsically wrong with torturing another person. And so when people come along and say, well, everything is relative, we should be skeptical about any claim to know truth, those arguments start to disintegrate a little bit when you start asking questions like, so is it ever permissible to sexually abuse a child? Is it ever permissible to rape some, et cetera, et cetera? And then you start to realize that people do actually have this sense of morality that's built into their reason. And no amount of skepticism can really dissolve that awareness, that one can know that certain things are always evil, and one can also know that certain things are always good. But I think one of the things about natural law, one of the reasons it often encounters opposition, is that it gets in the way of people doing what they just happen to want to do. So if you want to do evil, you want a type of philosophical system that will tell you, hey, maybe it's okay to do good in these circumstances or in these conditions. In other words, I think many of the arguments against natural law, frankly, are not made in good faith. Now, I've met good faith skeptics. I think they're wrong, but I think they're in good faith in arguing, making their arguments. But I think more often than not, the reason why natural law gets challenged is because it gets in the way of people wanting to use power to get their way and to use whatever means is at their disposal to do so. So that I think is one of the reasons why natural law is consistently challenged. But it's also, we also understand this is why natural law is so resilient, because our minds understand, without anyone even telling us this in the first place, that these are severe problems with skepticism and relativism.
You date natural law's drama more specifically to the 1960s and 1970s. Mm. I testify, Sam. I graduated university in 1970. I saw that transformation. I remember it vividly. And I'm pleased to see that we're still struggling with it. I've missed out on the development. That was, I sum up what the 60s and 70s remember for me. It was, no matter what you came upon, somebody would say, wave their hands and go, whatever. Whatever. Yes. And so yes. You would, that would stop your discernment of whether something was good or bad or useful or forbidden, whatever. Is that still going on, Sam?
Yes. I think it's fair to say that, especially in the academy, you will find sophisticated versions of the whatever response in many philosophical departments. So, for example, I think in if you look at a lot of modern philosophy, of the 20th century, but even into our time, there is this resistance to the idea that we can know certain moral truths definitively, because it gets in the way of when we just happen to want to do something, because it gives us pleasure or a sense of power or some type of, becomes a type of rationalization for doing whatever it is we've already decided that we want to do. Because the intellectually honest person doesn't start by saying, I want to do this, so therefore I'm going to come up with a philosophical system that enables me to do it. The morally serious and the intellectually consistent and coherent person asks themselves first, what is good and how do I avoid evil? When you start with that basic principle of natural law, that takes you in a very different direction to the, let's call them the whatever people.
You point us to two books in particular, one, John Finnis's Natural Law and Natural Rights, 1980, and most recently, Professor Moschella of Notre Dame University, Melissa Moschella, Ethics, Politics, and Natural Law, Principles for Human Flourishing. Is there a revival of natural law right now? Is this a trend, Sam?
Yes. So in the 1960s and 1970s, I think it's fair to say that natural law thinking in both secular and theological circles went into a type of an eclipse. And that was part of the time. It was the time of the cultural revolutions, time of the sexual revolution. There was a lot of questioning. And I think it's also fair to say that at the time, natural law philosophy was not actually in very good shape. But it had sort of developed in what we might call very legalistic ways. But with Natural Law and Natural Rights, which is written, as you mentioned, by John Finnis, he was my supervisor, actually, of my doctorate. And he's a Oxford professor of law at Oxford University. And he really recovered natural law in many ways and reintroduced it into, first of all, jurisprudence, legal philosophy, and also, which also led in turn to a type of revival of natural law in moral philosophy. Now, what's interesting about Finnis's book is you can read it, and he basically argues you don't need to be a religious believer to understand the truth of natural law. He says natural law tends to lead you in the direction of thinking that there is a God, or that it's more reasonable to believe there is a God than there isn't. But he says natural law is basically self-evident. It's a self-evident thing along the lines that we've already talked about. And that led to a considerable revival in theological circles, but also in some secular circles, of natural law as an alternative to the type of legal positivism that dominated a lot of legal thinking in jurisprudence, but also in the way the government and the judiciary operated. And since then, there's been lots of scholars who have emerged across the world who have been arguing, yes, natural law is still true, because by definition, it holds itself out to be a universal philosophy that stands above culture, that stands above custom, that enables us to critique culture and custom. And because it's built into human reason, it's by definition universal. And it's been applied to law, philosophy, moral reflection. I've used some of it in economics, which, as you mentioned, is my primary interest and focus as a scholar. And it's been very influential on a lot of judges and political philosophers really since the 1980s. Now, I'm not saying that it has somehow triumphed. It certainly has not. But what it has done is reestablish itself as an alternative to the type of relativistic, skeptical, and positivistic conceptions of reason and the way that those things apply in politics and the economy and social life in general. Natural law, I think, is alive and well now as an alternative to those positions that still, to a certain extent, I think, dominate the academy and the public square more generally.
I'm speaking to Samuel Gregg. He's the Friedrich Hayek Chair in Economics and Economic History, American Institute for Economic Research, contributing editor Civitas Outlook, the new natural law theory. When we come back,
stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.